Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real.
Produced by women about women, Powerful Women Let's Talk is a series of interviews with women who have helped shape our community and transform who we are and how we live.
Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Moss, and it's time for another edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. And I'd like to introduce you to today's powerful woman, Gloria Lara. She is the Executive Director of the Lakeshore Ethnic Diversity Alliance, or LEDA. Welcome, Gloria. It is so good to have you here today.
Well, thank you so much. I'm really pleased to be here, and thank you for asking me.
So, to give our listeners a perspective here, you have an extensive experience in the nonprofit as well as for-profit sectors. You're a native of Los Angeles, I found out, and since 2010, you've really been focused on nonprofit leadership. You have extensive experience showing a lead in finance, marketing, and sales, plus strategy and project management in executive positions at IBM, Chrysler, United Technologies, Automotive, and a lot more. And your board members are saying, and I quote, "She is the perfect person to lead the organization into the next chapter." And of course, we're talking about at the Lakeshore Ethnic Diversity Alliance. An awesome resume, I must say. And you're also on or have been on countless boards in our community, as well as previously being the Shore to Shore Girl Scout Council CEO. So again, we are happy to have you here. First, we want to start talking about your work at LEDA, again, the Lakeshore Ethnic Diversity Alliance, which you started working, over a year ago, right?
Just over a year ago.
Wonderful. Last Congratulations September. On that as well.
Thank you. We view LEDA as a bridge builder between different communities. It's been around for, next year will be our 25th anniversary. So wow. It's been sort of quiet in the Lakeshore area in Holland, but everyone around sort of knows that we're the place to go if they want to learn about diversity or how to engage with different members of the community. So we are known for our big event, which is our summit, where we get about 700 people face-to-face, mm-hmm. usually, to have listen to a keynote or two and then different workshops. And that's usually held in the late spring. But what also makes us unique is we have programs for children, for both middle schoolers and high schoolers, called Calling All Colors. We've been doing this mm-hmm. for almost 20 years.
Wow.
And students get together once a year for an initial face-to-face, and then they break off into the different schools and do work throughout the year, and then they come back together at the end of the school year. But because of COVID, we've had to do a lot of changes in how that happens. But what I'm really excited is in our last fall get-together, one of the school teachers said that she attended Calling All Colors when she was in high school. So now we're getting to the second generation.
Yes, that's exciting.
Yes, it is. So we've been building this on. It's a long-term effort, but we're starting to get a lot of younger people who have been through Calling All Colors.
And that's important, and it's kind of going from generation to generation, and it's also bringing about information for change. Things, when you say people can come to you if they're interested in learning about diversity and the like. And so you are kind of just a mainstay in the community where people can find out, especially during these times, what they need to do or how they can interact. And I mean, you are there to offer help to the community.
Correct. So after COVID hit, we closed our offices, so we were working remotely from home. But then after George Floyd's death, we were inundated mm-hmm. with many requests. Plus, the fact is, you know, as LEDA, we had to actually do something. And I felt very strongly that a statement offering support wasn't going to be enough. So that's when I started our LEDA community conversation. So similar to you. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing live streams every Wednesday with different members of the community, both in the Lakeshore area and Grand Rapids. But what I'm trying to do is provide a voice for people to have a voice who you usually don't hear from. And these are BIPOC, Black, Indigenous, and people of color. So for right now, for Hispanic Heritage Month, I have a bunch of different Latinos or Latinas talking about different items. But I've had the organizers of some of the peaceful protests, major church leaders, community members, business members, all being able to speak out about what it is like for them as a person of color, but also to really engage with the rest of the community to say, hey, you know, we're here and this is what we do to help everyone else.
And Gloria, as you look at that and you talk about that, how important is it for you all to be there to start those conversations or to keep the conversation going? Because it's a critical during these times, I would imagine.
Well, you mentioned a little bit about my career going throughout. Mm-hmm. But the thing that has been common in all my different positions, whether it's for-profit or nonprofit, is I've always been a voice. Like in the automotive industry, I've been a voice for women. In product and in design and in advertising and in planning. And then with Girl Scouts, a voice for girls. I was with the Michigan Hispanic Chamber based in Detroit, a voice for business, Hispanic-owned businesses. So now I'm a voice for so many different type of diverse populations. And so I felt it was really important. Okay, I have a voice. I'm not afraid of using it, mm-hmm. and I use it all the time. But now what I'd like to do is be able to give other people who you don't always hear from a voice. So I'm trying to also get to younger leaders. We have an amazing amount of younger leaders within this whole Western Michigan area, and I'm trying to get their voices to be heard as well.
And all it takes sometimes is for someone to open the door, and
yes.
then those voices can be heard. And actually, one of my questions I was going to get to was, so you say you have the voice and you've been a voice. What did it take for you to find that voice, to own it, and be comfortable in your own skin? Because not everyone can do that. Not everyone is willing to share or step up to the plate, like
right.
perhaps you have in some of your meetings and mm-hmm. the places that you've been and the places that you've worked.
Well, so I was born in East Los Angeles, and my parents were also born in California, but their grandparents, my grandparents came from Mexico. My father always said, never forget where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So that was, you know, so that's always been a huge influence on me. And in going to business school, 50% of our grade was based on classroom participation. So you had to speak out in order to make it through. And it had to be excellent comments. Otherwise, people would look at you like, you know, she's such an idiot. So you really had to be careful about what mm-hmm. you were talking about, but also make your point. Then my first position after business school, I was at Chrysler Corporation. I was involved in a project which involved young managers. We were all in our 30s. And what we were doing is trying to understand why major Japanese competitor of Chrysler was able to make vehicles and sell them to younger people, but Chrysler just couldn't get that together. So we reported directly for our final presentation to Lee Iacocca, who was the CEO and mm-hmm. chairman of Chrysler Corporation then. I'm standing there making my presentation, specifically telling Lee Iacocca that his strategy is not working.
You told Lee Iacocca that?
Yes, I told Lee Iacocca
that. You
have
a voice then.
Yeah. And we didn't get fired. In fact, they kept us after the presentation asking us for 2 hours, asking us questions and our advice.
Mm-hmm.
So what I learned from that is to speak truth to power. And so since that early in my career, that's how I found my voice, because it's like, well, if Lee Iacocca didn't fire me, then.
Absolutely. It gave you that confidence, too, that you needed. So I like that, speak truth to power, and mm-hmm. and that could serve, especially for a lot of young women who are looking to find their voice, that could be a serving statement for them, truth to power. So, you know, as you progress, and we look at powerful women, we know that it's not always an easy road. What are perhaps some of the barriers that you may have had along the way, whether it's climbing that ladder of success, just trying to meet the needs of the people in the community and whatnot? What are some of your barriers?
It was interesting because I didn't really key in on those barriers until after I joined LEDA as their executive director. And so I'm going through our curriculum and how we train people. And one of our major workshops is on implicit bias. Mm-hmm. Okay. So I started reflecting back on my career, and I remember asking, well, why did so-and-so get promoted to that job and I didn't? And the vice president said, well, he reminded me of myself when I was that age.
Oh, really?
And it's like, okay, this is a young white engineer. Okay, I'm, a young brown Latina, mm-hmm. not an engineer. I definitely did not remind him of himself
Absolutely
at that age.
Not.
And so I realized that that implicit bias has been in place many, many times in my career without me realizing it, and also without people being aware of what mm-hmm. implicit bias is.
And so, getting that understanding, and then understanding how it may have impacted you. Like you said, it took a while, but when you think back on your career, you're going, wait a minute. You think of those conversations.
Right.
And I think earlier on, you just kind of go, well, I'll just keep trying or what have you, not even recognizing that it's a system and a trend in many in power, I should say.
And you know, back then, people really weren't aware of it. I mean, now we have become very much aware of it. And that's what we try and do, is to have people understand, what are your implicit biases? Not that an implicit bias is bad, but what are your implicit biases? And once you recognize them, how do you address them?
How do you address them? And how are your implicit biases impacting others?
Exactly.
I would imagine as well. So being a CEO, executive director, and the like, you obviously are the one who knows how to take the reins and you lead. And what leadership, as you do that, what leadership traits do you like to see with those that you work with or perhaps those that you mentor?
I like people to take initiative. And I like them to really look at how they can do what they're doing better, and then how can they expand what they're doing for the good of the organization or the community. So when people come to me with ideas, I say, yeah, let's go ahead and do it. They look sort of shocked. And I said, look, you won't know unless you try. And we can always tweak it, and we can always get input from other people or other places. But I think it's an excellent idea, and let's get going on that. For example, at LEADA, people keep asking us, well, do you know any minority-owned businesses, black-owned businesses? And they kept coming to us. And I said, let's start a web page. And it's not up yet. It will be up hopefully in November. Let's start a web page with minority-owned businesses, black, Latinx, indigenous, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so I gave that to, our main person in the office, and I said, okay, run with it. And she's coming up with all sorts of ideas of how to expand that. And I think that's all you need to do is give people, let them know that you have the confidence in them mm-hmm. to do the job. And when they come back to you and says, I don't know if I can do this, or a roadblock, sit down and it's almost coaching. Mm-hmm. That's what I try to do, is I try to coach people.
And leading your companies to success at the same time, because you're all working on the same team. An important question I always ask, and that is, so, and I don't know your family status, how many kids and whatnot, but how do you balance your work life with your personal/family life, and how do you do all of that? Because the positions that I listed off are not positions that you can't put just a little bit of time. You cannot Yeah. just give them a couple hours here or there. It takes a lot of time, CEOs, executive Mm-hmm. directors. How do you balance it all?
Well, we have a 30-year-old daughter. And right now she's living with us because of COVID and all that. Mm-hmm. And my husband's also, working full time as an executive recruiter. So when we were all shut into the house, he was working the lower level, I was in the middle level, and she was up in her bedroom. But then we put a calendar up on the wall, one of these dry erase calendars, and we booked out when we were going to be using the Zoom site. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And then I got tired of them asking me what's for dinner. So then I wrote what dinner was. But, we sort of worked together as a team. If, when my daughter was younger, if my husband couldn't pick her up, then I would pick her up. Or we had someone else that was come and pick her up from school for, mm-hmm. a couple of hours. But we were able to really balance that out really well. And since we both had demanding positions, we understood, especially when we were both in automotive, we both understood what needed to be done in order to move your career along.
Your career and your family life, and
right.
to keep everything together.
Right.
So with all of that, again, kind of bouncing back to the positions that you've held, what is it that you do for fun to kind of let loose? I know you're busy, but everybody, especially during this pandemic, perhaps are doing something that maybe you weren't doing prior to the pandemic or pre-pandemic. What do you do for fun?
Well, my father's a gardener. He was a groundskeeper. And so I've always enjoyed growing plants. Mm-hmm. And I used to have a vegetable garden a long time ago before we moved to this side of the state. So this past fall, I thought, we live in a townhouse. I said, okay, I'm going to sign up for a community garden plot. So I signed up for a community garden plot, and I got assigned it in February before the pandemic hit. Mm-hmm. So now all of a sudden, everyone wants a community garden plot.
Of course they do. Yeah.
So I, you know, planted all different types of tomatoes and all sorts of plants. So that's how I would relax, is I would go there and just focus on that. And then I was actually able to grow enough tomatoes to can a few of them.
Oh, nice.
Because I learned how to can a few years ago, but I actually would go to the farmer's market, and I purchased a lot of, you know, tomatoes, I think a bushel, mm-hmm. from a Latinx-owned farm.
Oh, nice.
Right. And so I have, I don't know how many jars of tomatoes, but then jalapenos and all sorts of things. But what was really cool about the gardening is because since it's a community garden, everyone sort of talks to each other and sort of looks at each other's plots and what mm-hmm. are you gardening and all that. So the plot behind me, the people were from Guatemala, but they were growing one crop and it was like a big herb kind of thing. And something that they grow there traditionally, and they sell to the local Latinx supermarkets. Mm-hmm. So, and then there was another plot of just a few down that the woman was from Africa, and she was growing something that she had brought over to sort of help remind her of the food that you grew up with. Mm-hmm. But what I found what was interesting is everyone grows tomatoes.
Yeah, a very popular plant.
Exactly.
Vegetable, yes.
But that was the thing. So to me, that was my relaxation. During this whole time, because it was nice to get outside, get some fresh air, do some work, and see the results.
Because you could see the benefit of your labor, but also you were social distancing, mm-hmm. you're out in the open, so it was one of those things
right.
that you could really do and concentrate on. I bet it gave you a little relaxation.
It did.
That's wonderful. And so, on that same theory, what makes you laugh? You, your family, what do you guys do for fun?
I'm just trying to think. We're always all so busy. I laugh at silly things. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I have a pretty good sense of humor. And sometimes life's absurdities are, to me, it's like, oh, wow, that is hilarious. And you just laugh because I try not to take myself too seriously. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I don't take other people too seriously. But
that's probably a good thing, too.
Exactly. Yeah. But, you know, I smile a lot. I laugh a lot. I'm a very positive person, and even throughout all of this. Even with all the challenges that we've had, you know, we always try and find that silver lining, or, you know, like with COVID. COVID hits, we have this 700-person face-to-face summit yes. planned. So my staff is looking at me and my board is looking at me and saying, what are we going to do? So it was originally scheduled for May. So at the beginning of March, I said, okay, we will postpone this till July. Mm-hmm. But then looking at the data, by the end of March, I said, okay, we're going virtual. And they were like in shock. It's like, well, what are we going to do? I says, I'll figure this out. So we had one of the large churches become our technology lead to bring in all the different keynote speakers. So our keynote speakers, one was from New York City, one was from Philadelphia. And then we had like 5 or 6 workshops in the morning and the same number mm-hmm. in the afternoon. And we brought everyone in virtually. So it went smoothly.
Michelle Jokishpolo was part of that, was she not?
Right,
because I remember I watched part of hers. That was an amazing task, an amazing thing you all pulled off. That was wonderful.
Right. So, you know, so it gives, you know, my board the confidence and my staff the confidence. Okay, so now we're doing all this training virtually. Mm-hmm. So we're getting ready to train about 400 school teachers at one of the school districts.
Wow.
So we were meeting with the assistant superintendents yesterday. How are we going to do this? And I go, don't worry. Done this before. We got this.
You got this, yeah.
But the great thing, so remember I talked about calling all colors where mm-hmm. the children get together?
Absolutely.
Well, they can't get together nowadays. But because everyone now is used to working and doing things virtually, one of the things that we'll be able to do during the school year, now remember I said that they would come together mm-hmm.
at the beginning.
School year, and then they would go off in their little school groups and do the work mm-hmm. throughout the school year. What we're able to do this year and what we're going to do is connect the students in the different schools virtually during the school year. So
we
will be matching schools.
Very nice.
So that's something that's completely new that we've never been able to do before. But because of the capabilities that we have now, we're able to do that.
Do you think when the pandemic subsides and goes away that you will pull the kids back together again? Or were you thinking to continue Would you consider keeping it virtual? A lot of people are being asked
right.
these questions because everything so much has
right.
changed.
Exactly.
And they're seeing that things can happen virtually,
right.
business
exactly.
trips, et cetera. A lot of things are kind of maybe going to the wayside mm-hmm. now. What about things like that that involve our kids?
So once the pandemic is over and they're able to gather together at the beginning and at the end of the school year, I think it really helps for them to see each other face to face. However, we will still keep some of these elements. Like, we will still keep connecting them throughout the school year.
I think they probably need that, considering after the pandemic, people are going to just, they're yearning to see and get back to some sort of normal.
Right.
And just public or, you know, attention and gatherings together with people instead of being alone. You
right.
know, so many students are really
exactly.
hurting for that companionship of their fellow classmates.
Right. So had that, but then not combination of both. Just like for a summit for next year, I'm thinking that people still won't want to get together with 700 people even in, you know, June or July.
True. Mm-hmm.
So for us, actually doing it virtually makes a lot of sense, because then we're able to bring speakers from around the country, and they
kind of opens up a new door for
exactly.
you.
Exactly. So yeah. And that's what I mean about, you know, pivoting, and which is, you know, a strange word, but that's what we've had to do. And mm-hmm. it's like, yeah, we're able to do this. But I will tell you something that's not in my resume.
What's that?
So in high school, I went to Girls Catholic High School in the Los Angeles area, where I said the front door was in Montebello, the rear gate was in East Los Angeles. I wanted to take a physics class, and the girls' high school didn't have it. The boys' high school had it. But when I went to go see our principals, a very stern mother superior type person, mm-hmm. she said, absolutely not. I go, well, and then I had a plan B. I said, well, if you won't let me go to the boys' high school, can I go to the local community college? And I was able to arrange my schedule, so I was able to go to the community college during the school day.
And take physics.
And I didn't take physics because they didn't offer it. I took computer classes.
Really?
And so this was way back in the days with the punch cards and all that. So that's why having had that experience and knowledge very early, like in high school, mm-hmm. and this was before Silicon Valley, it shows you how old I am. But so that made me very comfortable with technology. So mm-hmm. all these years, I've always used technology as a tool.
So you were ready for today.
Oh,
with,
yeah.
With
yeah,
what's
it
happening.
Wasn't ready.
Yes.
It's like, well, can we do, of course we can do this. Just, you know, check it out. It's like, yeah, we can do this. Not a problem. Like we were talking, how many breakout rooms can we have? Okay, we can have 50 breakout rooms. Don't really want to get to that many.
Yeah, but you have the knowledge and the background there. So parting thoughts, Gloria, what is your favorite saying, if you have one, or a motto perhaps that you pass along to those that you generally are encouraging through
well,
your work?
I already said a couple of them.
Yeah, I know the one that I like, yeah.
One of them is from my father. Never forget where you came from.
Mm-hmm.
You honor that in your history and your background, because that really makes you who you are. So don't forget that. And also speak truth to power, but do it in such a way that it's not blatant. I mean, I don't like to do it blatantly in someone's face, but in a way that they can really consider and think about what you're talking about and understand, oh, that's why she is saying this.
Mm-hmm. And that meaning is the light bulb goes off and then
right.
they get it. And
right.
then you know that
right.
you've made
and,
a point.
And lots of times I like to tell stories to sort of illustrate. And mm-hmm. most of them is where I'm, you know, acting like it's sort of making fun of myself or some dumb thing that I did. But it helps people realize that, number one, you're human. But number two, oh, okay, that's a lesson that you learned from that.
All about leading and teaching at the mm-hmm. same time. Gloria Lara, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm so glad that you took time out to talk with us. And of course, I also want to thank all of you for joining us for this edition of Powerful Women Let's Talk. I'm Jennifer Moss.
Thank you so much.
Produced by women about women, these powerful podcasts focus on powerful women and how their strength transforms who we are and how we live. Want to hear more Powerful Women Let's Talk? Get additional interviews at WGVU.org or wherever you get your podcasts. Please rate and subscribe. Powerful Women Let's Talk is produced by WGVU at the Meyer Public Broadcast Center at Grand Valley State University. The views and opinions expressed on this program do not necessarily reflect those of WGVU, its underwriters, or Grand Valley State University.
Powerful Women Let's Talk is made possible in part by Family Fair, keeping it real.